If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in. Winning cures everything. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And we've got a lot to discuss. This is the Tuesday podcast. So we're not going to hit college football today, but we will discuss some of the other big topics going on in the sports world today. Saturday night, of course, was UFC 246. We will discuss Conor McGregor and what is next for the UFC. We're going to talk a little college basketball, kind of get in the mood. It is the middle of January. We're getting into late January, so we are getting ever closer to March Madness. So we're going to start some college basketball discussion, and we're going to talk a little NBA, mostly from a Memphis perspective. So I'm excited about that. Of course, the show always brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. You can bet on all these fights. You can bet on all these basketball games, football games, everything else. The Super Bowl obviously coming up. Go over to tunicatravel.com. They got six incredible sports books, and you can find more information about them there. You can find more information about us over at winningcureseverything.com. All of our picks, previews, podcasts, videos, social media platforms. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. If you're listening on the podcast, make sure that you subscribe and that you leave a nice review. We would always appreciate that. Apple Podcasts, that's a big part of their algorithm, is reviews and subscriptions. So knock that out. Again, if you're on YouTube, make sure you comment, hit the like button, hit subscribe. We do a lot of stuff over on YouTube. We've got a big base over there, and we appreciate all of you guys for jumping in with us. Let's go ahead and jump in. UFC 246 was Saturday night. McGregor KO'd Donald Cerrone, Cowboy Cerrone, in 40 seconds. So, of course, that leaves us with the question of what is next? Both of us watched the fight from different locations. The level of respect, first off, between these two. We haven't seen McGregor like this since well before the Jose Aldo fight, right? Like back when he was first starting, we haven't seen him be as, I don't want to say dialed in because he's been pretty dialed in, but he wasn't a showman for this one. And I don't think he had to be. Like his name alone brings a lot of clout anyway, but, you know, McGregor hugging Cowboy's grandma after the fight, like him hugging Cowboy right after the fight's over. And he has had good sportsmanship before with Diaz and everybody else other than Habib. But this was kind of not what we expected from his return. Am I right about that?
No, I mean, I actually kind of did. I know that some of his showmanship stuff before the fight is he just doesn't like these guys.
Yeah.
And he wants to fight them, even though he should, like Diaz. After the fight was over, every time, the one he won, the one he lost, doesn't matter. He always shows good sportsmanship. He always handles himself well when it's over. But leading up to it, he didn't like Diaz.
No, you're right.
And he made it a show. And so much of it is just talking trash about that person, about their crew, and belittling them and bolstering himself. And
there's
I
not
think
really anything negative.
It seemed like he has like a friendship with Cowboy. Now, I don't know how well these guys actually know each other, but it seemed like there was some type of friendship there. And he went in, he competed, he won, and then it was over. And then when it was over, after he did his hugs and he said his things, then he kind of put the show on afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think that is a respect thing for Cowboy. And I kind of expected it to be a little more toned down. The weigh-in was super toned down and very friendly compared to what it usually is with him. And that's when I kind of had a feeling we're not going to get the Conor McGregor doing the cock walk and the just – kind of in your face guy for this fight.
Yeah.
You could tell in the weigh-in that just wasn't his MO with Cowboy.
In the press conference. I mean, but what can you say negative about Cowboy? I mean, he's a legend. Most fights in UFC, most wins in UFC, most finishes, all that kind of mess. He's got everything. He's been around forever, and he has always been a class act. Like, he doesn't really talk a lot of trash. And he's a family guy, just like Conor is now. And, you know, I think there's something to that. Like, they both have kids. They both have significant others and whatnot. And they're doing a lot of this, you know, not only for themselves, but also for their families. And Cowboy has never had a gigantic payday like this one was. And, yeah, I think that's a big part of it. As far as the fight goes, the shoulder hits by McGregor, I hadn't seen anything like that before.
I've never seen anybody do that before.
It was awesome.
And when I first saw it, I kind of wondered, is that a legal hit? Simply because if it's not, why the hell has nobody ever done it? When you see guys get tied up together and they're just kind of, you know, it looks like they're kind of catching their breath because they're exhausted.
Yeah.
But they're also trying to make sure the other guy can't hit them. Why are you not using your shoulder there? Has nobody just thought to do that?
I wonder if it's a sportsmanship thing or, like, with this, I guarantee you more people will use it now.
Oh, shit, and, yeah, they're going to use it now.
And you are going to have to be on your toe. Like, your cardio better be awesome because that's not going to be a time for a little rest.
No.
And not just from Conor, but just across the board in the UFC.
Yeah, for everybody.
So, and we are obviously amateurs at this. We enjoy MMA. We enjoy the fights and whatnot, but we
watch as many of the pay-per-views as we can, but the, like, weekday stuff and all,
we don't watch,
like,
all of it
all the time. Yeah, we're not as dialed in, and I'm never going to claim to be, but yeah, I'm very much a casual fan, but I like it. I like it a lot.
The Conor McGregor did look really crisp in this fight. The kick to the face was perfect. And if you're a fighter, obviously, like, we do watch a lot of these fights. Obviously, like we just said, we don't watch all of them. But when you are looking for something like that, you are looking for it to land. That one could not have landed more perfectly. And it was just dead on. The timing was perfect. Everything about it was perfect. One of the questions is, a lot of people have asked, like, should Cerrone retire after this? I mean, he's late 30s. He's been doing this forever. He's off of 3 straight losses now. But when you go back and look at what his losses are, he lost to Tony Ferguson by a doctor stoppage. He lost to Justin Gaethje. And that was, you know, first round knockout, but or was that second round? I can't remember. Either way, he got stopped in that one, but he got caught, and it is what it is. And then he got caught by McGregor, and it was a comeback for McGregor. So, you know, I don't think that he's done. He's still a lot of fun to watch. I'm curious what his next bout will be, because he's one of those that they toss on these ESPN cards that they toss on, like the free ones that you can actually watch, and he's still a lot of fun to watch. So I don't think Cerrone's going anywhere. Do you agree with that?
But I really don't know. I don't know. But here's the thing. I mean, if you want to get out there and you want to fight and you want to take these shots and you want to try to make some money, I'm not going to tell somebody they shouldn't or they couldn't, you know?
I don't think that he's incapable. Like, there's some fighters that are incapable of being able to protect themselves.
Yeah.
I don't think that he's
No, I don't think he's that. I don't think he's that. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If he is that, you don't get that from the 40 seconds that you watched of this fight. That's the problem with this fight, is trying to judge too much off of it. When a guy gets caught the second the fight goes, I mean, Conor opens up with a haymaker and completely whiffs.
Yeah.
And then that's when they get tied up. And then he bloodies his nose with his shoulder.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anybody expected that.
No.
Damn sure Cowboy didn't expect that. So he kind of rattles back. Then the next thing you know, he's got a foot directly to his jaw, and then it's over.
Yeah.
So what can you gain from that? He made him miss with the haymaker.
It led me, like, I'll tell you this. I thought beforehand that I was kind of curious if this fight might have been kind of fixed. And obviously you don't want to talk about that in sports where integrity is a big part of it. But I thought beforehand, like, okay, well, they're setting up McGregor because the UFC obviously needs him back. Like, they need him competing regularly. They need him for pay-per-view buys, for just the sport in general, because nobody else has been able to take that mantle, right? Like, even Khabib, who is significantly more famous because he beat McGregor,
he's not more famous.
He might be
a better fighter than McGregor.
Well, I'm saying he is significantly
not more famous than McGregor.
I'm saying he's more famous than he was. Like, he's a big name now because of that.
Okay.
Nate Diaz, because he fought McGregor, is a bigger name now.
That's right.
You know, you still have those things. You got Diaz and Masvidal. You got those kind of things. Let's talk about McGregor, the only fighter to score KOs at three different weight divisions, which is pretty awesome. The talk after the fight was McGregor could possibly headline UFC 248 in March. Now, I don't think that's going to happen now because they've got Adesanya and somebody else. Or no, Kamaru Usman and Romero, I think.
I do think because he didn't take a lick,
yeah,
they're going to push him to fight quick.
Well, and you would say that, but Dana White came out afterwards, and because this gets into our big question of what is next for Conor McGregor, Dana said Khabib is the fight to make. And he believes that it would do more pay-per-views than it did the first time. He says that the first one did like 3.3 million, and most of the real numbers that are on different websites say it's like 2.4. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle there, but I don't know that it would do as many this time because there can't be near the hype that there was. 'Cause the hype last time was just, there was so much hate, and it was exactly what you want for people wanting to watch a train wreck, you know? So there is the Khabib aspect, but if you do that, Khabib is fighting in April against Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, if that's the case, then yeah, that's going to... But who's to say that McGregor can't fight before that fight also?
Well, that's the thing. Dana wants McGregor to wait for Khabib, but Khabib, because of his Islamic faith, doesn't fight over the summer. So he's not going to be back to fight until September, October. At that point, McGregor will have gone another 9 months without fighting. And I don't think he wants to do that. So if you're going to do that, you got to get into all of these other different ideas, right? Floyd Mayweather, posted a fake fight poster like right after the fight last night. And it was those two, and it was Mayweather-McGregor 2 coming 2020. And Dana White did talk about Mayweather hitting him up constantly throughout the night last night, or on Saturday night. And if that were to be something, like, my biggest question is, what does the casual fan want to watch? Because I don't know that the casual fan knew who Cowboy Cerrone was before last night. And by casual,
the problem
with
MMA is the casual fan doesn't know who any of these guys are.
Other than McGregor.
Even Khabib, the casual fan barely knows him.
And they only know him because of all of the storyline leading up to the last one.
That's right. That's it.
And so if you are a casual fan, casual
fans, need to find a way to build another star. I don't know how to do that. I'm not in that business.
So Jorge Masvidal had a gigantic 2019, right? He won the BMF belt against Nate Diaz, and that was kind of a standalone thing, just who's the baddest mother out there. But that could be an interesting fight. Now, Masvidal did say back months and months ago that for Conor's comeback, like, it wasn't going to be against Masvidal because UFC told him, nah, Conor can't handle you. We don't want to put him up against you. We want to put him up against somebody he can actually beat. So with him saying that kind of stuff and then Dana coming out and saying, now, we'd like for Conor to wait and then us do Khabib too. Like, that's what made me think of that. But it would be nice to see, you know, that whole thing. If you get Conor sticking around at welterweight or whatever, or however he would need to fight Kamaru Usman, Now, Usman still has a fight before that, but that would be an interesting one. Maybe it's Nate Diaz 3, like at Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz 3. Like, that could draw in some people because, again, casual fans didn't know who Nate Diaz was until he upset McGregor. If you are looking to spend money on a pay-per-view and you don't watch UFC all the time, what is the fight that you want to see the most?
I don't know the answer to that. I just know it's got Conor in it.
I think that's the biggest thing. I think it doesn't matter who he fights.
That's true right now. You can't ride that horse forever.
No, that's true.
Like if he continues, yeah. They have to develop the next guy.
But is the next guy Masvidal? Like, Masvidal lost a lot early in his career, and yeah, he had a big year last year. But, you know, he had that he basically retired Ben Askren. He knocked him out in, 6 seconds? I mean, he had that flying knee kick, or the flying knee to his face that, like, knocked him out almost immediately. And that became, like, such a huge highlight. It went viral everywhere, all that. And then immediately after that, he technically knocks out Nate Diaz for the BMF belt. Like, I guess if you were going to do that, if you were going to give him maybe Masvidal, but the thing you got to be worried about is, okay, if Masvidal does destroy McGregor, does that make Masvidal really big, or does it just hurt your brand with McGregor?
We've seen McGregor lose, and it didn't hurt his brand. He lost to Diaz, didn't hurt anything. He lost to Khabib, didn't hurt anything.
Yeah, but if he continues to lose, that's the question.
Well, no, you don't want him to continue to lose. Yeah, you need to find some folks that he can beat between some of these fights.
And that's the, like, you...
Well, and therein lies the issue there is if his next fight is either Nate or Khabib or Masvidal, and he's, you know, going to be, worst case scenario, even money or a dog in all of those fights, then, you know, I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
You've got to find a way. But what I think is you just have to find a way to boost those other guys. But the problem is that to find somebody who has the skill and capability of fighting and has the personality to be a star is so hard and so unique. Yeah. Because some of the things that makes these guys great fighters are the fact that they were introverted their entire life and they weren't, you know, big, you know, spotlight guys. And that's why they got into martial arts. And that's why they got into fighting is because, you know, it was kind of a self-defense thing of not necessarily defending yourself, but just trying to find a place where you fit in. And those aren't the qualities of somebody like Conor. That's just a star. And I think we live in a world today to where if you want to be a star and you want to be famous, you're not getting into a sport where you go get punched in the face all the time.
No, that's you're
and,
you're
and
very
so
right
the people that make the best fighters don't have the personality to be marketable stars.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's a generalization. That doesn't mean that we won't find another one and see, this guy's amazing and you were wrong. Yeah. There's a reason that it always struggles to find them.
Yeah. Like you can have
Chuck
really
Liddell
good fighters.
Was a unique situation. Yeah. Conor McGregor's a unique situation.
You can have fantastic fighters that aren't showmen. Like that's just how it is. I think
most of the fantastic fighters aren't showmen.
True.
And very the guys true. That want to look good and be showy don't last because they get their ass kicked.
Yeah, Khabib, Nurmagomedov is not a showman whatsoever.
No, like, not at all.
He does not care about the press conferences. He does not care about that aspect of this at all.
Nope.
He fights because he wants to fight.
Nate Diaz seemed like he tried to go jar for jar with Conor before their first fight. And he'll
still talk smack to anybody. Like he does that, but it's not to the level.
No.
So it's not, he's not doing it.
It wasn't entertaining. Like it looked forced and it looked awkward and it looked like a guy that was trying to be something he's not.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think back to what should be next for McGregor if Dana White is serious about making McGregor Khabib 2, and you need McGregor to do something in the meantime, your best bet is going to be put him in the boxing ring again.
Like put him against Mayweather. He's going to lose again. So then you're going to watch him lose on you know, a big monster pay-per-view that's going to make, you know.
And I don't think that's going to affect him at all. When it's against a guy that is undefeated, like Mayweather is, okay. You know, now, Khabib still has to get through Tony Ferguson. They've tried to make this fight happen 4 times before this. And it, obviously, once we get into April, we're going to start trying to get some interviews with some guys that cover MMA. But, you know, Khabib Ferguson has been scheduled 4 times. And those two guys have each dropped out twice due to injury. You know, there was a weight cut problem. There was a torn ACL. There was, you know, this and that. Like, all kind of different stuff has gone wrong. This fight has seemed cursed forever. And it's now a big-time fight because of what these guys have done in the meantime. But we'll see if this fight actually happens or not. I think the Mayweather thing, like, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's going to bring in a ton of money. It's going to keep him training.
It's going to be so boring, though. I think if you get that many people to buy in a second time and it's awful to watch again.
The first one wasn't awful, though.
Yes, it was.
I didn't think it was awful.
Gary, you come on now.
It was a complete sham, but I enjoyed it. It was entertaining.
The first 3 rounds were entertaining, and then Conor ran out of gas, and they just chased each other around the ring.
Yeah, no, you're right about
that. They literally, like, walked around in a circle and looked at each other for 9 rounds.
Yeah, yeah.
It was unbearable to watch after the first 3 rounds.
Yeah, after the first 3, the next 7 were kind of whatever. And you saw a few things from McGregor that, you know, made you think he might have had a chance. But
so here's another thing Dana's got a problem with is he had a star, a megastar, one that is every bit as big or as good as Conor in John Bones Jones. But that guy just continuously just can't stay off the cocaine and the steroids. Well, and so it didn't matter how many fights he won. They immediately became DQ'd as soon as it was over because, hey, pissing this as soon as the fight's over. Oh, yeah, you're taking horse tranquilizers.
I'll give Bones Jones some credit here. He has stayed clean for like a year and a half now.
He's been in the league for like 15 years.
He was suspended for like 2 years. And when
only reason he's been clean is because he hasn't fought enough to be tested.
But that's the thing. He has fought a ton. He's fought like 4 times in the last year and a half. And that's a lot for a big-time UFC fighter. So, you know, the issue is he came back and there are still the people that doubt whether or not he's really clean. There are the people that...
Well, yeah, nobody will fight him.
And on top of that, like, he's... I think maybe he's fighting a little too much against people that... People really don't know some of these guys, you know? Yeah. So the pay-per-view buys are okay, but they're not great. And so
Conor's going to end up being, though. At the end of his career, that's just what it's going to be. It's going to be a bunch of no-name guys trying to make their name off of maybe beating him, and he's just going to rack up a ton of easy wins at the end of his career.
But I'm curious if Dana will let him get to that point because Dana is right. The biggest fight that UFC could make would be McGregor and Khabib. If Khabib ends up winning this fight against Ferguson, like that would be a massive, massive fight. But like how big is it? And would Conor actually have a chance in that game, in that match? I don't know. So. We'll have a lot to discuss, of course, going forward in the fight stuff because in the NFL and college football offseason, we're going to be talking about boxing. We're going to be talking about all kind of different stuff. So,
for the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's go ahead and move on We're going to talk a little college basketball today. Let's talk about some of the big topics that have happened over the weekend. Topic number one, for the first time since 2006, Duke lost two straight as a top five team after their loss to Louisville at home on Saturday night, and they lost at Clemson in the middle of last week. If you look at Bracket Matrix, and they've got just a ton of different, you know, bracket experts or whatever that, you know, they round them all up and they average everything out. Baylor is your number one overall seed. Kansas is a number one seed. Duke is a number one seed. And Gonzaga is a number one seed. Duke is still considered a number one seed even after these two losses. And if you look at KenPom numbers, if you look at efficiency metrics, all that kind of mess, Duke is still one of the top teams, but they got to get off the slide. They do face Miami on Tuesday night, so we'll see if they can get over that. They face them at home, so we'll see what happens there. Your two seeds right now are Butler, San Diego State, West Virginia, and Florida State. And then you've got Dayton, Oregon, Auburn, and Michigan State as your three seeds. How insane is it that you see names like Baylor, you know, Gonzaga, Duke, Kansas, totally normal one seeds, but Baylor as a one seed is weird. And you've got Butler, San Diego State, West Virginia, and Florida State as two seeds. Like, I think to the average college basketball
fan, that's
going to
change so much between now and tournament time.
Yes, but the fact that those guys have come out and done what they have done so far, I think the average college basketball fan would not believe you if you told them that that was what the two seeds were in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no doubt.
Kentucky got a big win over Arkansas. They moved to 13-4. And people wouldn't think that that's a big win, but Kentucky lost to South Carolina on the road on a last-second shot in the middle of last week, and they were actually an underdog in that game to Arkansas. Arkansas only has two losses, or well, now three losses on the season. Arkansas's done pretty well under Musselman. I mean, he's like he's done fantastic so far. The other big topic was Auburn. Auburn opened up the season 15-0. They didn't have a single quadrant one game, much less a win, in their first 15 games. Their schedule was really, really light, and they went on the road and lost at Alabama and at Florida by 20-plus points in each. That was shocking that they got beat as handily as they did in both of those games. The Tuesday night big games, of course, are going to be Florida-LSU, Texas Tech at TCU, and then Butler at Villanova. Florida-LSU is not a top 25 game, but Florida 12-5 coming off of a pretty big win over Auburn, and LSU is still undefeated in SEC play. I know that you are an LSU fan, not so much college basketball, but...
Oh, I follow the basketball team. I follow all their sports.
So coming from you as a fan... Is it weird to you to still see Smart and some of those guys playing for LSU and still seeing Will Wade on the sideline, even after all the FBI stuff?
Not at all. If I was the athletic director for any of these schools, I'd be doing the exact same thing. Bruce Pearl's going nowhere until the NCAA does something. I'm not gonna self-inflict pain on my own team when at the end of the day, if they do an investigation and they find out something happened at LSU on this date, they're still going to punish you.
That's a good point.
They're going to, if the NCAA 2 years from now comes and they say, hey, last year in 2018, you did this. And so therefore we're going to bring this punishment down 4 years later. Then why am I going to hurt myself the 3 or 4 years between that?
That's a good point.
They're not going to make it extra hard because we kept those guys.
Texas Tech, TCU, interesting game. It should be relatively close. Jamie Dixon's done a good job at TCU since he got there from Pitt.
He really has. He really has done a good job at TCU. The Big 12 basketball has gotten substantially better. SEC basketball has gotten substantially better over the last couple of years.
Chris Beard at Texas Tech, not as good this year as they were last year. And that's
lost a lot of talent.
Yeah, lost a ton of just seniors and NBA talent, et cetera.
Just athletes, man. They were the most athletic team in the tournament last year.
Oh, yeah.
One of the most athletic teams in the tournament last year.
I don't know that they had a single four-star on the roster.
That's because people who grade stars on these things just aren't always – good at what they do.
Well, I look at it more as Chris Beard as a head coach is remarkable. I think he's incredible. You know, Butler and Villanova, if you had told me before the season started that these two teams, with what they were losing and all that kind of mess, that they would be two top 15 teams, Villanova may be top 10 by the time, you know, this podcast comes out. But Butler, I mean, good gracious. Like, they lose Brad Stevens to the NBA. They lose Chris Holtzman to Ohio State. And they just keep rolling. Like, it doesn't matter who the coach is, it doesn't feel like. So, yeah, Butler, that's going to be very interesting. And, of course, we talked about all the bracket matrix stuff. We'll continue to talk college basketball throughout the season. I think once we get towards doing some weekend stuff, we might do some picks on Saturdays. If you go over to winningcureseverything.com and go to the gambling picks section, I bet college basketball games every single day. I am sitting at 58.5% on the season. A $5 better would have made, if you bet every single game, which I don't expect you to, but I bet all these games. And if you bet $5, you would be up over 100. If you bet $10 each game like me, you'd be up over $200 right now. So if you want to go check those out, see what I'm doing on the season, winningcureseverything.com, go to the gambling picks section. And finally, the last topic of this show, let's talk a little NBA. And we're going to talk about it from the perspective of Memphis fans. The Grizzlies are absolutely rolling right now. Now, we are recording on Sunday night. This is going to come out on Tuesday morning. Obviously, there is the MLK Day game between the Grizzlies and the Pelicans that will happen between now and then. But that doesn't change what the storyline is. Taylor Jenkins, as a rookie head coach, he's like 34 years old, I think. And Ja Morant, who is a rookie, 20 years old, he, along with Jaren Jackson Jr., Dylan Brooks, who's a third-year player, this team is fantastic. They are a ton of fun. Tell me, I mean, I know that you've watched a lot of it. You've watched the Mavericks a lot this year. You've watched, you know, some of the big-name teams. What is the ceiling for this Grizzlies team?
The ceiling for this Grizzlies team is probably the eighth seed is the ceiling, because I do think there's a difference. When you get into the playoffs, just young teams don't win in the playoffs, but I think it's important for them to get those minutes. I absolutely think that I would fight like hell to get the eighth seed and to be able to have two home games in Memphis where we can say thanks for the season, try to win one of those. But have your stars, have the core that you're building around, have your coach be involved in meaningful, very difficult, grinding it out, hard playoff games. I think that's extremely important for a young basketball team. Before the season started, when we were talking draft stuff last year, said I was ecstatic that Memphis got the two spot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because we could have gotten the five spot or the eight spot or whatever. It was because I didn't want the one spot, because I knew what would happen. I knew everybody in the world said, you got to take Zion. And I made it abundantly clear, if you made me the general manager of the Grizzlies and you gave me the number one pick overall and Zion Williams was standing there and Ja Morant was standing there, I made it abundantly clear last year before the season started, before anybody went to a camp or anything, that I would take Ja Morant.
Yeah.
I've seen what he does, and I know how that translates to the NBA. The NBA has become a run-and-gun offensive basketball team, but that guy, he still steals the ball. That's the only defense that's ever being played now, is in big-time, high-profile basketball, is if you can get picks, if you can steal the basketball, and he can steal the basketball. But on the other side of that is – He has the best court vision of any point guard I've seen in a long time. I feel like the basketball is on a string and he knows where it is at all times and can make it do anything he wants it to do. He finds the open man when nobody even knows that guy is there. The other night when he did, it looked like he was going to the hole and he comes up and he passes the ball behind him. And it's like nobody even saw that guy standing there, and he's wide open, and he's 2 feet from the goal. He just grabs it, throws it down. It's like, holy shit, how did that happen? I think he's the most exciting player in the league right now. I really do. We've watched Harden for up 10 years score 50 points a night, and it's kind of gotten boring. And some of that's a testament to Harden, but he gets fouled. He gets a lot of calls and he makes a lot of free throws and he just shoots a lot of mediocre range threes. Like they're nothing really exciting about the three anymore. So he just shoots a lot of bland shots. The two most exciting players that I've watched this year are Luka and Ja. And it's a rookie guy and a second year guy. And they are incredible. And some of that is because the big stars are, you know, load management, like, you know, watching their time, watching their bodies, taking care of themselves. You know, Giannis is still probably the freakiest person in the NBA right now. And I think the best overall player in the NBA, but I think the future of the game is in great hands with two young guys like Luka and Ja, and Memphis is pretty cool to be a part of that.
Yeah, I do agree. For the Grizzlies, the unsung hero here is De'Anthony Melton.
Yes.
This guy, since Ja came back, he is a lot of the reason why this team is able to do what they do. I mean, he's all over the stat sheet, and sometimes it's not even the stat sheet. He brings to the Grizzlies kind of what Tony Allen brought. And it's not the same thing by any stretch of the imagination.
Not close, but yeah.
But it's kind of the same. Like he glues everything together really, really well. You got Brandon Clark, whose PER is 19th in the league. It's 22.45. So his player efficiency rating is way up there. De'Anthony Melton is 70th. Ja Morant is, let's see, his is 18.77. He's third on the team. And his PER is 58th in the league. Like, these guys are young. De'Anthony Melton is a second-year guy. You know,
yeah, I love the Brandon. You brought up Clark.
Oh, he's incredible.
That guy. I mean, this core is going to be really good if we can find a way to keep this team together.
I mean, you keep Dylan Brooks, and he's a third-year guy, but he was injured for a lot of his first and second season. This team, Jonas Valanciunas is second on the team in PER, and he is, let's see, 22nd in the league, I think, as far as that goes, 21st in the league. These guys are all incredible. Like, they work so well together, and I think that's the biggest part of a game that people don't pay attention to in the NBA is team chemistry. And it's like that with college basketball as well, but maybe more so in the NBA. If you've got guys in a locker room that don't like each other, that becomes a big-time problem. But when you've got a core like these young guys that the Grizzlies have, and then you've got your veterans with Jay Crowder and Solomon Hill, guys like that, and then you've also got, you know, Grayson Allen and Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, who's been around for a while, but he's also one of those guys that understands his role on the team. You know, he played for Pop forever with San Antonio. Like, this is the beginnings of something really, really big for the Grizzlies. I'm happy about it. It's exciting to watch. They've won seven in a row at this point. Their team record, I think, is 9. So if they beat the Pelicans on Monday, which you'll be listening to this after that, you'll be able to tell after that, they go and they play at the Celtics to try and get to number 9. So we'll see. We'll see if they can set the record and whatnot, but so far, so good. They've been a lot of fun. Tell me what you think about the Mavericks. I know you've watched a lot of them. I haven't gotten a chance to. I've only seen 2 games this year. I know Luka is incredible.
Luka's one of the most special players I've ever seen. Last year, I screamed it from the rooftops. Yeah. We did a little NBA coverage before the draft, and I said, there's no doubt in my mind this kid should go first. He should go number 1 overall. He's going to be the best player out of this draft.
Does he just make
it? The best player out of this draft next year, he's going to be the best player out of this draft 5 years from now. He'll be the best player out of this draft 10 years from now. At no point in time in the league will you look back and him not be the best player that came out of that draft.
I agree. Does he just make everybody else around him better?
Yes, this is what elite level point guards do. And the league kind of went through a weird phase where the point guards were kind of always the best players, but they were high profile scorers. It was your Currys, it was your Westbrooks and your Hardens, and those were your great, great point guards in the game. And we being Memphis guys grew up with Mike Conley, who was kind of like the anti-point guard. Like he didn't look anything like those guys. He was a true traditional point guard that, you know,
like a CP3 in his heyday.
That's right. Yeah, he could shoot, but for the most part, he got you the ball where you could capitalize on things, and that was not kind of the way the league was going, and you had to have a point guard that could be, you know, really athletic, really quick, and can shoot, which Ja's developing a shot, and then also get everybody else involved. I think Luka's that special. I think he's that good.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun watching the NBA going through the rest of this season. This league moves at such a fast pace that in college basketball, it's difficult to try and do podcasts around, you know, results and whatever else. But we will continue watching storylines, and
we're gonna follow our regiment and when we cover everything that's happened before that, and we will talk about everything that's going to happen after that the best we can. And that will be just the way we've got to handle it. But you know, this is a very local thing. It's a very Memphis thing for us, but not really if you're an NBA fan. That's just not the truth. The two biggest NBA writers that I know and I follow are Ringer guys, and it's Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo. And they're the NBA guys that I've grown up with. And follow, and both of those guys do nothing but tweet this stuff out on their shows. They talk about the number one league pass team, and the reason for having the league pass right now is the Memphis Grizzlies. You can get all the – you're going to see Giannis on ESPN and TNT. You're going to see LeBron and Kawhi and Harden and all those guys on TNT. But you need to pay for the league pass to watch Ja.
Yeah, and he's worth every penny.
He's worth every penny.
Yeah, it feels like every time that we watch a game, it's like we're waiting for that moment, and it's come up in every single game. Every game, there's been something special that has happened. And so
yeah, no, he's impressive.
Is there anything else that we need to hit on for this episode?
No, man, I think we're good.
I think we are. Of course, you guys know, go over to winningcureseverything.com. You can find all of our picks, previews, podcasts, videos, social media platforms. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter. If you're watching on YouTube, hit subscribe. Hit that like button. We do appreciate you guys for watching the show. If you're on the podcast, make sure you hit subscribe. Leave a nice review. We appreciate you guys as always. Go over to tunicatravel.com. Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They got 6 incredible sports books. You can find more information, like I said, over at tunicatravel.com. Chris, we will be back on Wednesday, and we'll actually be doing that one in person, right?
Yes, sir.
Dig that. All right, we'll see you guys again later.
Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.